following podcast may be explicit. One Joe Young presents Adventures from the Shed, a tabletop RPG podcast. You can find us online at adventuresfromtheshed.com.
You can find us online at adventuresfromtheshed.com, iTunes, Facebook, YouTube. What? That's not YouTube, is it?
No.
I don't know what that is.
No, it's not even close.
You got to do like, hi, everybody. And quick cuts to the same thing.
Forget it. We're back in the shed, and you can see from above mine and Chris's head here. We're back with Trail of Cthulhu, the Keeper of the Woods.
I can't see.
You know, this is going to be part two.
We always tell everyone where they can find us. What about if they just wanted to come here in person? Should we give them your home address?
If you like.
If you guys could hack it and figure out where we're at right now, you're welcome.
We're going to say hi, starting with this guy over here. What's your name, buddy?
Hey, everyone. This is Kurt. I am playing the Keeper, which is essentially the game master for this Trail of Cthulhu adventure called The Keepers of the Woods.
Keepers of the Woods. And then next we got...
Hi, I'm Verge. I'm playing Terrence Cruz. He's a author, former policeman. He's really shaken up by the death of his friend. It's terrible.
Speaking of death, who's next?
Hey, this is Chris. I'm playing Howl Low, the dilettante, but with my new fancy of archaeology and the occult.
Hey. And I am Joe. I am playing Sherman Rawlings, who is a procurator of fine books.
Excellent.
Kind of like Johnny Depp's character in The Ninth Gate.
Very nice.
I am not familiar with that.
Before we jump right back into
pop culture references.
Tell me two sentences about what your character looks like physically, just so I have a picture in my mind.
My character, all right, so I'm looking at it as Sherman is always going to be dressed smartly in like 4-year-old clothing. So there's going to be frayed edges on the shirt or something like that, but only when you look closely and notice. He's not particularly rich, but he's dressing as if he were wealthy.
Gotcha. Is he small, big, tough?
Pretty medium everything.
Okay.
I pictured my guy as kind of Hugh Jackman from The Prestige, kind of, you know, well-dressed, you know.
Ooh, I like that. Dude. I actually saw that.
Very nice.
That was really good.
Handsome man, Hugh Jackman.
Thank you. Terry's your standard private investigator-looking type, you know. He's got a, you know, suit, long coat, got the hat going on. He's always carrying around like a little notebook for notes and, you know, things like that, because he's always trying to get stuff to write his books. It's a very nondescript look.
Excellent.
And what does Kurt look like?
He's just trying to keep it together. I wanted to mention a couple things. We talked about it a little bit off air, but one of the neat things about the gumshoe system is that you know, if you run out of points in a particular area, there's almost always another skill that you can use to get to either the clue or the additional information. So I asked, for example, about how many points do we have left as a group in, you know, say, assess honesty, and we're pretty
You know
low.
What, Kurt? I don't think you ever unmuted your microphone. Why don't I hear you?
That I don't know.
All right, well, go ahead.
You gonna have recording?
I got you. You know, I forgot we're only recording on the left channel. Thank you, YouTube.
Gotcha. So, for example, if we're low in that, that just means you might have to use, you know, cop talk or reassurance or flattery or something to get maybe more information out of a person if you think that they might not be telling you the truth.
Yeah.
And finally, there's kind of a catch-all category, which if you just don't know what to ask, you can always try to use evidence collection, and there's a good chance that I'll let you use that for.
Make sure we have the bags for it.
Yeah.
Cool.
We also realized after we turned off the recording that maybe there was one more thing that we should do here at the Thistle Lodge before heading out to either the inn.
I guess two things, kind of.
Two things? Okay. What are those?
I kind of want to ask her about, you know, where's her husband? You know, I haven't seen Mr. Blackman around. What is he up to?
Yeah, and she says, oh, James, he'll be delighted to meet you all, but he's out working in the fields. Yeah. Although with this weather, and she kind of shakes her head and looks worried, and she's like, I hope he'll be back soon.
It does seem oddly cold.
It's frigid.
Mm-hmm.
It's frigid.
Also, the rooms. We wanted to get rooms. I was wanting to know if we could maybe get her room. I'd like to take a look around. See if there's any. She called us for a reason. I wanted to see if there was anything we could.
It's a bit maudlin, don't you think, to want to stay in.
I'm stricken with grief right now, my lady. I would like to just be around my friends' belongings.
Well, if you're looking for anything in particular, you know, of course, I'm happy to show you the room, but the police have already been here, and they conducted a thorough search. I believe that they took any of her belongings that were left. It's so disconcerting. The professor, you know, she woke up quite early and seemed to have left in a real hurry. The sound of her starting her automobile actually woke me from my sleep in the early hours of the morning. She seems to be in quite a rush leaving, but she left her things here, or at least most of them, so I assumed that she was coming back, of course. And,
did she receive any messages or telegrams? Yeah?
Not that I'm aware of. She did leave a few things, but as I said, the police in Princetown would have those in their evidence locker.
Understandable.
But you're welcome to look around.
I would be looking for things different than what they would.
She's happy. She takes you actually upstairs, so this is the second floor here. Mm-hmm. And she shows you to a guest room, which again is fairly Spartan and simple, but pleasant. And there's a bed, and there's a dresser with a nice lamp on it, and a little outside window. But it's, at this point, you can look around, and you don't find anything of particular interest.
Okay.
There's nothing else we could try to look around for. It's something that we might have missed.
No.
Okay. I just wanted to, because I know we're going to go check out this accident site eventually, and we might be in the dark. Since flashlights did exist, is that okay for us to have at least one of each, like we
sure.
each would have one?
Yeah, they would call them a torch over there.
I believe.
You would have a torch. And by the way, she gave you kind of the information about generally about where the accident site is, and it's on the way to Princetown.
Okay, perfect.
So we could look at that
tomorrow in the morning.
You'd have to pass
yeah, we can. That's fine.
On the way there. But right now, we were heading towards the tavern.
Yeah, the Dart something?
The East Dart Inn, which has a bar on the first floor, which is kind of the pub for town. So you guys want to start there in the hopes of finding William,
yep.
William MacArthur, I believe?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. You start in, might look something perhaps like that.
Like that?
Hold
it up there.
Yeah, so this is kind of one of the major buildings on the street. You know, as I said, there's generally smaller cottages, rural, but you've got this... inn. So where we are, the lodge is kind of almost more of a bed and breakfast. This is actually a little bit of a larger inn. And then this and the church would probably be the two major structures in town. But it's really, you know from talking to Hannah that it's primarily a pub where the laborers come to drink when they come in from the fields.
Yeah.
And she had told you that William often is there even during the day. Just kind of being a drunk as a result of his time in the war.
So kind of being a drunk.
For what it's worth,
like you do.
Yeah.
The inn is named after the river that kind of flows through town, which is the East Dart. It was a coaching inn way back in the day for people traveling between Princetown and one of the other neighboring towns. Now it just mostly services the laborers here. It's got a very plain whitewashed exterior, as I just kind of showed you. But as you walk in, it's very warm. The decor is very warm inside. The walls are painted actually like a deep, rich green. And there's ample seating, and there's actually some nice kind of what I would think of as like English leather kind of sofas and chairs. You know, really what we might now think of as kind of a traditional English pub on the first floor. There are several tables around the floor, and there's a large, deep stained oak bar on the far wall.
Mm.
Behind the bar, you see a gentleman obviously working the taps. At this point, what we're like 4 or 5 o'clock probably.
Yeah.
So at this point, there are several people in there at the table and several people sitting up at the bar. But you do notice one gentleman at the kind of the left end of the bar sitting by himself, just kind of staring into a glass of whiskey. And based on a description that perhaps Hannah had offered to you, you suspect that this is probably William.
When I go up to the bartender, order me a pint, and then another of whatever he is drinking.
Okay.
And I want to take it over to him and sit it in front of him and sit beside him.
Okay. So the bartender is looking at you, you know, a little askance, like he can tell that you guys are outsiders. He's not cold, but he's also not overly warm to you. But he's happy to take the order, and he pours a pint of ale for you, and then he goes over and takes a bottle of Irish whiskey, maybe John Powers or something of the like, and pours one on a couple of pieces of ice and says, I'm not sure he needs another one, but says, here you go. And he says, you know, that'll be 2 pounds. Whatever the appropriate amount would have been in 1935.
Pound went a lot further.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. And like I said, there are a couple of other people. You notice them looking at you as you come in. None of them seem particularly friendly or warm. But you guys definitely feel like outsiders as you walk into the pub.
Yeah. So I don't say anything. I just sip, put it in front of him. Look, you need one. I know I do. I'm gonna let it marinate there for a bit.
Yep.
I'll find a table towards the back ish and just watch what's going on in general.
Yeah. And if you're
looking for anybody with big hairy hands, to be frank. And I'm serious. I mean, I would because I read that, therefore.
Right.
I'm thinking if anybody did that, there was someone sitting in the back seat. Grab the steering wheel and force the car to crash. So I'm in my head, that's what I'm looking for now.
Gotcha. William MacArthur is not, while he nods and says he appreciates the drink, he's not particularly warm or receptive to you at this point.
That's fine. It's an opening. That's what I'm...
Yeah. And you know, he might comment on the fact that it's getting cold out there or something like that, but he's not... Doesn't appear to be one for chit-chat generally. And Chris, what is Howell doing?
I'll order a drink and maybe some food if they have any available. And I kind of want to ask the bartender if he's seen James Blackman in here today, or if he's in here now.
So they do have some food, you know, basic pub fare, so chips and things of that nature, fries.
I want bangers and mash.
Bangers and mash? I think they could probably do that if you're willing to wait for
pub
it.
Pub food.
So. Yeah, get some shepherd's pie.
You ask about in general. About James, which is Hannah's husband.
Yep.
And he looks at you and kind of raises an eyebrow.
Hannah said I might be able to find him up here.
No, he hasn't been in at all today. Just leaves it at that. So, don't recognize y'all. They wouldn't say y'all.
Y'all.
Don't recognize y'all over here.
Don't recognize you.
They do, however, say reckon.
Where are you in from?
We're in from London.
London?
That's where we're from, right?
For sure? That's right. And so the barman's what brings you to our sleepy little village.
We had a colleague up these parts, and I guess she had gotten a bad car wreck.
Ah, it must be the professor lady.
Yes.
Horrible news. He says, he shakes his head. And he just kind of grabs his bar towel and just goes and pretending to... off the bar.
Gotcha.
I just want to talk, like not even look at him, just kind of say, I'm drinking for grief right now. What about you? I'm going to say that to William.
To William?
Mm-hmm.
And says, well, it's as good a reason to drink as any. He says, when you know, see what I've seen, you'll drink a fair amount.
No.
And you can actually see that his face, he's got like almost looks like a acid burn or on his right eye is inside of his face. You don't know if maybe it was a gas from the war or some type of burn injury, but he's looking pretty messed up.
Old injury from the war?
This is yep. So
seen plenty of myself. I myself had to retire from the police force because something, well, not probably not as bad as what you've been through, but It took me out of what I wanted to do.
Yeah, he's like, he's slurring. Like he's been drinking there since the bar opened. So he's like slurring. His sentences are somewhat garbled, but to the extent that he's talking to you, he's kind of agreeing with you. But he's not giving a lot of personal information at this point. So, but yeah, I mean, he'll play along a little bit with your small talk.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been around this area? I'm fairly new. It seems like a fairly interesting little town you've got here.
Says I, you know, other than going to France, I've been here my whole life.
So you know the area well.
Well, not much to know around here, but I know it as well as anyone, I reckon.
So he's seen London and he's seen France.
That's true. That is true.
I don't know why that's funny.
Serious business. And as you kind of talk with him, he like gets increasingly agitated, and you can see him start to kind of look around the room and as if he's looking at, to see who's looking at him. Cthulhu is not looking at him, at least not yet. And you get the sense that maybe like sitting up at the bar where everyone can see you, maybe he's making him a little bit his talking to you up there might be making.
I look around. I see my friend sitting at the table in the back.
Yep.
Sherman.
Why don't you come back here and sit with us. Tell us a little bit about the local area. Tell you what. I'll order your drinks as we go.
Awesome. So do you have like a point available in flattery or reassurance or something like that at all?
No.
I do.
I do as well if he's going to end up at our table.
Well, I'm just saying, so
because I could say, like, hey, I'll get you a meal, you know, get some food in you.
I was going to say, excuse me, from my perspective while I'm watching everything, did it seem like the bartender was being evasive with how?
When he asked about James?
Yeah, and he said he hasn't been around here and just went to go wipe off the counter. Did he seem evasive? Like,
he just
didn't want to answer?
The fact that he kind of raised an eyebrow when you asked about him, you get the sense that he thought it was a strange question to be asking. Yeah. I was wondering maybe why you were asking.
Well, that's why I kind of threw in the, like, oh, my, you know, the wife said, I might be up here.
Right. And then once you said that, he just kind of went back to his business.
Okay. So it wasn't like he was hiding something.
No, it was more because I'm a stranger asking him, like, what are you asking about this dude, local dude?
All right.
So the fact that you were willing to buy him, what's your credit rating?
3.
Right. So why don't you use a point of credit rating for the willingness to continue to purchase him alcohol, and then that combined with Chris coming, or with
How
coming over and offering the private table makes him comfortable enough that he'll go and sit with you for a little bit. And then particularly because you've expressed interest in wanting to know more about town, and while he does suggest that the town is very sleepy and there's not much there, you know, he knows all the local folklore and legends, and he's, as you will see, fairly passionate about that.
Cool.
Figure if we can get some food in him, he might sober up a little bit too, and we can just chat and eat and drink.
So he goes back with you, and he's still keeping an eye. He can tell a couple of the guys are, you know, keeping an eye on him. And he's not comfortable, and he's drunk, but he is now with you guys and seems a little bit more open to chatting.
Cool. So he's uncomfortable at his normal drinking hole? That's
you, with three strangers. You get
the sense but I mean,
you get the sense that they're wondering why you're paying attention to him, perhaps, is your impression, or why he would want to pay attention to him.
Gotcha. He's now at the cool kids table.
Sure.
Therefore. Yeah. And I, for...
Like, he's like the local rummy or the local drunk. So, like, why did three strangers just come into the bar and try to...
Yeah. Why not talk to somebody who's smart?
Yeah. Why not talk to the barman?
Yeah. So, Sherman's general attitude the whole time is just going to be to sit and listen and try and figure out what's going on. Probably won't ask many questions unless we need to get out of something. He's good at talking himself out of things, but not necessarily into things.
Right. And I think I mentioned last time, but in case I didn't, I just want to remind you that I think Hannah had told you, when I told you about William, and she said that the professor had
interviewed him. Right? Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're on the same.
Yeah, that's why we...
He said he wanted to interview him as well.
Right.
Yep.
So he's, you know, he's been drinking watered-down beer earlier in the day, but now he's moved on to the harder stuff and appears to be enjoying his whiskey.
So there's a reason why we wanted to talk to you, my good fellow. Our friend and, in certain ways, colleague, the professor, Blackwood, we were told that she had interviewed you about local legends and stories and things, that you were very knowledgeable about this. I just want to see what exactly you had been able to tell her, because... I mean, I don't know about these two, but I'm very interested in what exactly. She seemed very excited about what she had found here.
Well, you I did speak to her a couple times while she was here in Postbridge. As you said, she wants to know about the local legends, and, well, I know a damn lot more about them than she's going to get out of any of those books she's been studying. So, yeah, we chatted a few times. She was just kind enough to buy me a pint.
Was there a specific...
very nice lady.
Specific legend she was inquiring about?
She was asked about everything, so she wanted to know about the legend of the hairy hands, which you may have heard about already, and because it was in that silly newspaper. But she wanted to know more generally about the history here, going back many, many years. And you know, there's a lot that we could tell. And he's like, there's a lot that we could tell. she was spending a lot of time at the library over in Princetown. And she's been researching books and there are things that she knew that she wanted to ask me about.
Is there anyone else she interviewed besides you?
She talked to some of the other locals here at the inn, but you know, they don't know a damn thing. They all believe in silly superstitions. But there's a lot more out there than you would believe.
When you say that, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, people here, they talk about the silly hairy hands caused the professor's death. Like, that's a load of malarkey.
What is this hairy hands?
It's just silly. I don't believe in it at all, but there have been a couple of accidents in the same place, and one of the drivers, the driver of the bus that crashed, he didn't die, and he said that he felt like a pair of hairy hands gripped the wheel and caused him to swerve.
Is the hairy hands part of an older or other legend, or is it just something that he felt and now it's kind of taken on a life of its own?
Yeah, exactly that. It's just silly. It's nothing. It's just... didn't exist in our history, no prior hairy hands. It's just some people can't drive, and one of them happened to feel like something gripped the wheel, and now we've got the legend of hairy hands, and the newspaper writes about it. They're a bunch of malarkey, but you know, like as a ghost causing people to crash cars. But I tell you what, there's worse things out on the moors than ghosts.
Such as? I myself am an author of scarier or supernatural type story, so I'd be very interested in hearing something like that.
Okay. Do you have any points in something like maybe occult or anthropology?
I have one in occult.
Okay. You can.
I have accounting.
I have occult.
I would like to hear an account of this
story.
Yes,
exactly.
Just generally, so I know who has occult.
I called it to you.
I do not.
Do you have anthropology or local knowledge or anything like that?
Nope.
Anyone else have anthropology? Okay. Verge, since Terry is talking with him, why don't we use a point of occult if you want to get additional information out of him?
All right. That's my only one, so we're good now. I got zero on that one now. It's all up to you.
All right. Hope I don't die.
I mostly hope you don't.
So he's... So he's told you that he doesn't think the hairy hands, that's not a real long-term legend or anything that he puts any stock in. He says, but he'll kind of ramble about all kind of things. And as you're talking with him, one of the things that he'll want to tell you about is about the Yeth hounds that he's seen. He says, they're legends and people think they're made up or stories of old druids or things, but I've seen them. My own two eyes, since before, the war, made so I can barely see anything. Since people think they're legendary, but they're based in fact for sure, and terrifying. People would be good to believe and learn that there are real monsters out there. And then, assuming you continue to talk with him, he'll also want to tell you about Old Crockhorn, which is what the locals around here call the old horned man of Wistman's Woods. They call it an evil spirit. They say sacrifice was made back to it in the Civil War. Even hung several fools, but the English Civil War. Even hung several fools as witches who used to worship or make sacrifice to Old Crockhorn, the Horned Man.
That's interesting. Okay.
That's just very nice.
Who has assess honesty? Okay, so you don't have to spend any points, but you're obviously paying careful attention to him as this is going on, and you can, I mean, I'm even playing him a little more coherent than he is. I mean, he's like a rambling group saying these things, and so it's not like he's staying on task with you exactly. But you get the sense like that there's more to some of these stories than he's telling you.
Oh, yeah.
But the more he talks to you, the more he's like, just like at the bar, he's starting to get more agitated and looking around and seems to be worried about who's watching him talking to you. You're kind of pushing him and getting him to talk more. And, you know, right as that happens, you hear a loud howling from outside. At first, it sounds like the wind, like maybe like wind coming down a chimney. But as it becomes louder and louder, you can tell that there's nothing natural about the sound. And this will cause you all to have to make a stability check.
I was going to say, I would definitely jump. I feel like I'm on edge anyway.
Yeah, like I said, at first it's the wind, but this sounds like a real howl. And particularly in light of what he's been telling you about demonic hounds. So this would be a 2-point loss of stability if you were to fail.
Oh, I'm not going to bet anything on this one. There we go. I'm going right for it. I'm not gonna roll that die again because it rolled too far. Let's go with this one. There we go. Six again. Rock.
Fuego. So you hear the howl.
On fire too.
And you certainly notice it, but it doesn't shake you, to your core.
All right.
Yeah.
Another six.
All right. Wow. I'm gonna
mess
this up.
Another one?
Oh, five.
All right.
All right. So,
so we've heard Yeth Hounds before, obviously. Yeah. Well, and maybe, for that matter, maybe the reason that we weren't so freaked out about it is he just mentioned a hound, and then there's a howl.
Right.
So it's not.
And the hound, completely. That might have been 20 minutes ago that he mentioned it, but it certainly is during this conversation.
Yeah.
And so so you guys are okay, but as he hears this, William is like, no, not again. The price is too steep. He says, the price is too steep, it must be paid. Oh, or it'll all come to naught. Oh.
What price are you talking about?
And he says, as he's saying this, you see the bartender look over, and the bartender, like, almost runs from behind the bar over towards him, and he's like, oh, you need to leave him alone. He's drunk, he's getting worked up. He's like, William, it's time to go home, he's getting his coat from the bar and putting him on, and he says, oh, the price is too steep.
Perhaps we could walk him home.
Yeah, we'll drive him home.
Look to the church, you'll understand the stones. He says, oh, was it all for good? Was it all for good? And at this point, the bartender is just, he's definitely
separating.
How old
is William?
He's probably 30, like 40.
Okay.
He's not an old man. He sounds and acts like an old man.
But he's been around a while. He's not like a 20-year-old.
Oh, no. Okay. No, 40 to 50.
Okay. Because this would be a lot more freaky coming from, like, a teenager or a 20-year-old.
And so you guys are, trying to obviously keep him or offer to take him home. And the barman who, you would have heard at this when you were up there, I think his name is Pierce, for what it's worth, Pierce Whitlaw. And Pierce is not going to let that happen. He's taking him and mm-hmm. says, I'm going to get him home. And he takes him out the front door.
Mm-hmm.
He always drinks too much, and you've gotten him excited. He needs to go home and sleep it off.
That's all well and good, but that there was that sound. That's what piqued his agitation. What is that? Something that happens frequently?
It's the moors. There's all kind of sounds around here. That's some worse than that, and they're all for naught.
I still say we take him home.
Yeah. we should at least follow him.
Yeah.
I'm just checking one thing here.
Maybe at a safe distance.
Medium pace.
Provided the keeper allows us to.
Yeah.
I mean, he just says, he gives you the sense that he's unhappy that you disturbed this friend of his or this local who's obviously not in control of all of his faculties. He just needs to get him out there.
I'm not going to fight it. I think this day has taken its toll on me. I think I need to get some sleep. Especially if we're going to Princeton tomorrow.
Agreed.
Plenty of things to do, especially now that I want to check out that church.
Yep.
Yes. Can we see the church from about where we are? I'm not handy with the map now.
It's a lot closer now.
Yeah, you already saw...
Is that under your paper?
there?
It's right here.
There it is. Okay.
Yeah. You, so you saw that when you, you came in here to the lodge. Now you're at the inn, and it's up at the far end of kind of.
Okay. What's the scale there, dude?
I mean, this is a real small village.
So,
yeah.
So we can probably see the church.
Quarter mile up the road.
Are there any street lights or lanterns or something where we would know?
No. It's gonna be real dark.
Then it might not be worth going to check out the church yet.
At this point, so are you still in the bar? Or did you step outside to follow?
Oh, I would like to kind of see, where they're going.
Yeah, be a good idea.
Yeah. So if you step outside, like at this point, it feels like since you arrived in town, the temperature has dropped 50 degrees. It's now like
good gosh
nice cold. You step outside and instantly you have
vapor plumes.
I wanted to say smoke, but it's not smoke. Frost coming out of your mouths. All but the most hardy person would have to like completely pull a coat around.
So I am completely pulling my coat around.
Right. And
I'm not the most hardy person.
I had said that there was a very light kind of flurry earlier. And during the time that you were in the inn, it has turned to like an icy sleet, like a really freezing sleet.
That sucks.
And so it's just a foul, foul night. So knows what the roads will be like.
Ever leaving this town?
Ever.
So I think.
Head back to the lodge.
I think that's the right next step.
Yeah.
I want to check the church out, but not in the middle of a sleet blizzard, a slizzard.
Slizzard.
And the dark. I think church may be one of the things we check out in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah, before we leave. Yeah.
Definitely intrigued that. That he said, look to the church.
The stones.
Church and the stones.
Price is too steep.
Mm-hmm. And then as he was leaving, you could hear him beseeching the bartender. It was all for good, wasn't it? And they went out. You saw them go out the door and turn left and just walking, pulling their coats up. And it looks like he was going to be walking him home. So he must not live very far from the bar.
Okay.
You all head out to, you wouldn't have driven here. This is such a short.
Yeah. Oh, just walk, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's not even evidence collection, really. As you guys are leaving, you notice that one of the other people at the bar who had been watching you particularly steps out and turns right and goes up, is going this way.
Towards the church.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so at this point it is dark, it is sleeting. It's freezing, and it would not be safe to drive to Bridgetown, and the church is likely closed. So,
yeah, let's definitely at least get a good night's sleep and start in the morning. If nothing else, the sun will get colder.
Certainly shouldn't.
Okay, so y'all head back there, and Hannah's more than happy to offer you warm tea and biscuits and. I think you all had some food at the pub, so that's fine. And really, nothing happens during the night.
Is her husband James home?
Her husband James was not home, at least not that you're aware of.
We're gonna go into his room at some point. He's going to be on the bed with a picture of James just caressing him.
Where are you?
Just James, wherefore art thou,
something
James?
Something fishy going on, man.
I need to use cop talk.
He'll be stroking it with a little fishy. Something a little fishy's going on, James.
Okay, so do you all have anything else that you want to do there during the evening? Or
out of habit, I would look through the bookshelves and see if there's anything particularly interesting in this old out-of-the-way town that might find its way into my possession.
Ooh, Lord of the Rings, first edition.
Hey. From Tolkien, whatever that is.
I think you'll actually find that to the extent that she has books there, that they are very bourgeois in the sense that she obviously bought some volumes to put out to look like they were learned and to have for guests. There's absolutely nothing special. It would be the equivalent of what we might think if you were in Book of the Month Club or had gone to a used bookstore and just bought like a box for $5.
A surprising number with Fabio on the cover.
All right, so you guys are, what is your stability at, Terry, Terrence?
Six.
Okay. And you guys have not had any stability loss
yet. No, I lost.
I did. Because I bet two on the first one. So I used two, but I'm at eight.
Seven.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
what?
Sorry, I'm just kind of skimming something here to decide if I want to do this now or do this later.
Kurt's doing some book learning.
I'm doing some book learning.
He can get there.
Like, is it worth trying to ask her about the old crack horn or, you know,
or the death house? I thought you just said crack horn.
Look, crack horn, where's your husband? Crack horn.
Is it worth asking her about the old crack horn right now? What page is the crack horn on? Crackhorn. Yeah.
This old crackhorn is his first name Jimmy.
And I don't care. I don't. So, assuming we brought luggage and stuff, we got a place to stay. I mean, we can just do this little montage of carrying stuff inside in the sleet weather, and it's miserable, and having to take the jacket off and hang it near the fire.
Exactly.
So we're all doing the jacket off thing.
Yep. So it's jacket off.
Yep.
Cup talk.
So you guys...
it's scary, just so you know.
You guys passed the first evening, uneventful. But when you wake up in the morning, the ground is completely covered in snow. So obviously during the night, the sleet must have turned over to snow. And now what was a green pastoral landscape when you arrived yesterday is just blanketed in snow, and as is often the case, after snow, it feels particularly quiet. Does anyone have, like, physics as a
skill? I do.
Okay. So you would know, I mean, you would all probably know, but you especially would know that there was no way that this type of the temperature drop that has been experienced in the last half a day, is natural in this part of England. Mm. So something very strange is going on with the weather.
Interesting.
So it's not deep snow, but there's snow on the ground, which you'll still be able to get to Princetown, but it will be a little bit slower going, and you have to drive more carefully.
Right.
First, we were going to go see the church.
Yes. Church.
Church.
Okay, you're going to do the church?
Take me to church.
Yeah, we're going to the church.
All right, I've got to flip to the church because I thought you were going to Princetown, but we'll make that work.
I mean,
yeah. So you got the police over there. All right.
Go to church, Kurt. Go to the church.
It is right.
Church. It is church. You, Kurt. Bring us to the church.
Here we go.
Bring us to the church. Read it. Read.
So the church, which is up at the end of town, is St. Gabriel's. It's at the north end of town, as you already know from the map. Given the snow, you guys, I don't know whether you would choose to drive up or walk. I think given the time of 1935, you probably would just walk up there.
I would say.
We'd probably just drive up so we can just go to Princetown as soon as we leave.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll just do that.
All right, so you find...
Plus, I want to test out the driving conditions.
Well, so that's what I was just going to say, is you would find... and do you have driving?
Yes.
Driving
pool? Yeah, 10.
Okay, cool. So you would find... it's certainly much, much harder... these old automobiles to drive over the snow. You don't have snow tires or chains.
Or even radial tires.
Right. But you are able to, you know, eventually work your way, taking far longer to get that short distance than it should. But you're able to get up to the church. It's a dark gray edifice. Looks like it might be constructed out of granite. And it really does mark the edge of the village. There are a number of gravestones kind of jutting haphazardly from the ground around the church. And you see kind of strange carven faces wrapped in leaves kind of in the cornices of the ledges of the church.
So the stones.
You see upon arriving.
So we have to look to the stones.
Yeah.
So.
If there's anything you learn from horror movies, follow the ramblings of drunk men.
Move the stones, but he didn't move the bodies.
There you go. So, if you want to look at the gravestones at that point that are outside?
Yeah.
All right, so just upon the kind of initial simple search of the graveyard, and particularly given that you'd already spoken with William MacArthur, you're able to realize sort of a pattern in the gravestones, even though they are jutting haphazardly, like I said, around the church. It looks like they're actually in trios, where the dates of death are only several days apart from each trio of stones. You also...
We're talking about three car crashes in a short period.
If you also notice, it looks like the dates of death for them... at first, you can't tell because you're looking and the dates are wildly divergent, but it looks like they're roughly 25 years apart. Like, so one might be 1910 and one might be... I'm not doing the math here properly.
Right.
You know, 1770, but when you look at them as a whole, you notice that they're kind of a quarter century.
Interesting.
And it's 1935, so the other one was probably 1910.
Oh, it's January. Yep. So how long was the difference between the first two car crashes and hers?
Right.
You said these are a couple days apart each.
Yeah, and I might have misspoken the car crashes. So the doctor, you will find out if Hannah didn't already tell you, he died in the car crash. Motor bus crash was not a fatal crash.
All right.
And the doctor was, he was a month or 6 weeks ago.
Okay.
So not a couple of days.
It's almost like this town made a deal back in the day and then there's a sacrifice to be.
Maybe it's Jimmy Craghorn.
Yep.
So you can tell.
Sounds a bit far-fetched.
The cathedral, or the building, it's not a cathedral, but the church, the facade and the cornices and the ledges and the doors, there's lots of carvings and things in them. I don't want to push you, but if anyone wanted to spend...
I was going
to
spend...
It seems like very druidic kind of carvings.
I was going to say, if anyone wants... Yeah, architecture, art history, theology.
I have art history, yeah.
I have accounting.
How many of you have in art history?
I have two.
Okay. So if you want to spend one...
Well, then who would... you would probably give your character
for the archaeology. Yeah,
more
definitely.
Interested in the archaeology and the building than probably the cop would be. So, Chris, why don't you spend a point in either art history or architecture?
Art history.
Okay. So what that point spend just means is that you're willing to spend some extra time looking around and use your knowledge, and you would see that. A number of the carvings have a motif that you recognize from your study as being what people would call the Green Man.
Oh, yeah.
The Green Man's considered by most to be a pagan icon, although he's really been kind of incorporated into a lot of Christian iconography, so it would make sense potentially for him to be in a church.
That's just the way of Christianity in general, just pagan things being incorporated.
Exactly, exactly. You had architecture, right, Bert? So while Terrence is looking around, if you're willing to spend a point of your architecture knowledge looking around the church, you can tell that despite the fact that the church, and this would be based on kind of the plaque that's there, claims to be have been constructed in 1865, that parts of the church are old, very old, much older than this. In fact, you can tell that some of the windows appear to be of Norman design, so... from kind of northern France, but elements could be Anglo-Saxon. There's a piece of graffiti on one of the cornerstones of the church as you're looking around that appears to be written in Latin and you think might even be dated back to ancient Rome. Most of the... Joe, do you have any history?
Oh, I think I actually have history. I said that, but no, I don't. Sorry. Where? Oh, history there. They're in different sections. I was looking at a different spot. Yes, I have uno punto.
Okay, so would you like to spend that for a little more info?
Yes, so.
Okay. And by the way, when you guys are...
Sorry, that's points, Italian.
Remember, nothing that you're getting is crucial to moving forward, but I think it helps make the story better.
Yeah, yeah. So.
I think it's important that I use it because, like I say, I wanted to be looking around at stuff that was useful.
Right. And you're never...
I mean useful as in to me.
I just assume if you guys have taken the time to drive out there on a freezing, snowing morning, you're all kind of simultaneously looking around, and your characters are using the skills that they have. So
exactly.
So it makes sense to do it this way. So, Joe, if you're using history, you're kind of focused on the gravestones in particular, and you are the one who kind of first noticed this pattern. But as you look at them, you can tell that a lot of the gravestones are also really old, and that a lot of the old graves have become really overgrown to the point where you almost can't see them as being separate from the earth in some places.
Okay.
And that some of them date back all the way to the 1600s. So I don't remember the exact dates of the English Civil War, but that was in the early, maybe 1630s, if I remember correctly.
So this town has been around, well, I mean, granted, we're in Europe, so towns have been around for thousands of years, but this town has been around and marking graves for hundreds of years.
Right. And as you look at this more closely, you notice that some of the newer graves are actually reusing old headstones. Hmm. That at least one of them, as you kind of work at it and study it, like has a date going back as far as like 1342. So
all right.
These are going way back.
So is it one like that old also has another epitaph on it or just another date?
They're actually like literally reusing the headstones and carving newer dates over older dates.
Wow, okay.
Like that. Hmm.
Because it's nothing I could make money on, I would share that information so everybody knows that.
No anthropology for me.
I think you would, Chris, you would know just from your character and your studies and your architecture knowledge that you know what I told you about the Green Man already. Mm-hmm. You would also probably know that the Green Man is often considered a benevolent entity. Yep. It's often associated with like rebirth and healing and hunting. So that's just upon coming to the church, like with your initial exploration, that's kind of what you see before you guys have even gone inside.
This is very strange. Like just the architecture, there's pieces that just don't make sense.
Agreed.
Like from different areas of the world, and they're all just extremely old to be put in this church. Like this wouldn't have been built more than 60, 70 years ago. But there are certain pieces that seem like they date back to ancient Rome.
Well, the Romans were up here for a good long while, right? Hadrian's Wall and all that jazz.
That's exactly right.
I mean, granted, but why would you put something like that?
You know, just keeping part of the old style with the new, you know?
Mm. Do you want to go inside? Or
see if we can talk to somebody.
Yes.
The door is actually unlocked. I mean, it's a large, heavy door, which makes sense given the English winters here, but it is unlocked, and when you head inside, the walls are actually painted with like gleaming white. They reflect the light to the extent that it comes in, although it's still quite gray outside, although not as bad as it was yesterday when the storm was coming in. You know, that has stopped, and now it's just chilled cold and snowy.
Overcast, though?
Yes, but there's still some light entering in through kind of the tall, thin windows. There are wooden pews that lie in the nave, and there's a wooden screens. You know what you would expect in kind of this type of church.
Old stained glass.
A little bit, not particularly fancy like a cathedral, but there is a window up over the altar. And what you guys particularly notice in light of the time that you spent outside is that there's up in the roof is a series of connecting arches carved out of oak. And that they bear, those arches bear patterns that are similar to the motifs of the Green Man that you saw. Hmm. There's leaves and foliage, and you actually see the leaves and foliage like entwined around a set of antlers in some of them. There's no additional spend needed to see this or to make the connection that there's a similarity with the motifs that you saw outside. Towards the rear of the church and to the right of the sanctuary, you can see a door that think probably leads to the vestry. But wouldn't know without checking.
Because of the specific interest I have in books, I would look through the pews, the pockets on the back of the pews, and see how old the Bibles and hymnals and whatever are here.
Yep. So you actually find hymnals and Bibles, King James Version Bibles, but they're not old at all.
Nothing special.
They appear to be have been purchased within the last 5 years.
Okay.
So, some are worn, but not worth anything to you.
So I would say, as I discover that, I'd share with them, it's definitely interesting to me that with all of the oldness on the outside, that they would have such new volumes inside. Seems things should be a little older.
Maybe they just worship a lot.
Could be.
Yeah. Where the books down.
Yeah, this is the town church, so they would have weekend services here, presumably. Mm-hmm.
I want to go through that other door that we saw towards the back.
Okay. So that door is actually locked.
break it in.
Does anyone have an ability to get in?
Did you have some?
I'm sure I do.
I bet the criminal's got something that can help us.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Locksmith.
See, and this is the thing. I always forget which spot. Technical. So I don't have locksmith, no. Mm. So, there. Ha! I do have filching, though.
Does anyone have a point left in architecture?
I could steal the lock.
I do.
How would that work? So I have filching. Could I steal the lock?
You can steal the lock, but not the key.
I have intimidation. Can I intimidate the lock?
You do a little better open.
With your architecture, if you're willing to spend the point mm-hmm. to get in here, you would recall from the time that you spent outside that there is actually a window on the outside of the building that would be on the other side of the room that is presumably behind this door. That with a boost, someone could probably get through the window.
Okay.
Sounds good.
I'm going to have to sneeze, so I'm going to turn off my mic for a moment. Talk amongst yourselves.
Say a so chew.
Who wants to go in and who wants to boost?
I'll go in. What are we looking for?
Pretty much anything.
All right.
Well, if we can unlock the door from the other side, then we could all get in.
Very well. I'm sure I could, find my way.
So we'll go around to the side and I guess both of us will just kind of toss them in.
Yeah.
One foot on each, and then just.
I would, for as much as possible, Kurt. I would attempt to stealthily make my way in. I don't want to alarm the sleeping priest if there is the vicar.
So you all are. So it's you going in over the.
Yeah.
Okay. So you are able to get Sherman in through the window, no problem. And you do not see a priest or a vicar or a father or a reverend or anyone inside the vestry.
Pastor?
What you do see immediately is that there's a bookcase, there's a desk with papers on it, there's several vestments and robes hanging from the wall.
I want to take a quick look around before I let them in.
Of course.
Before you look around?
Before I let them in, before I open the door for them.
Okay. So you can... you see that there's a desk that's covered, or partly covered, with sheaves of paper.
Okay.
Do you have theology by any chance?
No, I do not. I have library use, if that helps me at all here.
Yeah, I mean, you would certainly be able to read well enough to tell that, even just from a really quick scan of these, most of them appear to be sermon notes.
Okay.
And essays on Christian theology. But based on just like a really quick flip through, you can tell mm-hmm. that some of those might be worth spending a little bit more time with. I don't know how long you're willing to spend in there with your guy standing outside.
I'm really looking for something that would fit in my pocket that I could sell later.
Okay. In that case, your eyes might be drawn to the safe.
Yeah.
On the desk, perhaps.
That's open, right? It's open.
Well, so...
No locksmithing.
This was a party... character creation error for no one to have this skill because, and this is as an aside, really, you want to make sure that your party covers all of the skills mm-hmm. in this game. And by using the pre-gens, we didn't really spend, or the sample investigators, we didn't spend a lot of time making sure we had everything covered. And two of the other sample investigators probably had locksmithing.
Probably.
And I personally find
you do.
Did I not write it?
Yeah,
is that what you're telling me?
Sheldon has locksmith, or whatever his German, Rawlings has locksmith, too.
All right, I have locksmith. I never wrote it.
Oh.
That's my mistake. There we go. I'm going to write it now.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Chris.
So if you would rather...
That's right here in front of me, too.
So this is up to you guys. If you would rather have used locksmithing to get in rather than him using architecture...
Nah. I'm good.
Okay.
Well, he likes that we're locked up for now.
Yeah.
So do you want to use...
This actually would have been a smart move.
Yeah.
Actually, if you have locksmithing... I do. You don't even need to spend a point.
Damn right. I'm that good.
To gain access to the safe, as long as you're willing to leave your buddies outside.
Well, we have to take time to walk around.
Yeah. When I hear them walking up towards the other side, I'll kind of monkey with the door a little bit. It's a tricky lock. Give me a moment.
Okay. So you quickly look inside of the safe, and... Yeah. You find several valuables, including the silver collection plate and a communion vessel, a chalice that appears to be solid silver. And you also see a hardbound journal that you immediately recognize as Professor Blackwood's journal.
That goes immediately into my pocket.
Okay.
Once I do that,
And I'll leave the other things in the safe.
Okay. And then you also had suggested you were looking around specifically for
old books
or things of value.
I mean, valuable books. Okay. I shouldn't just say old.
So you would, of course, be drawn to the bookshelves. And there is a volume of interest to you among all of the Bibles and religious texts. A leather-bound book bearing the title Testamentum Vigilum. Looks like it might be worth something, or at least be interesting to you.
Testamentum Vigilum. Okay, and I've rethought a little strategy here. I'm going to close the safe. I'm going to put the professor's journal on the desk.
Okay.
And then I'm going to unlock the door.
Okay. Did you take the Testamentum Vigilum?
I will once they come in.
Okay.
So I'm unlock the door, let them in.
All right, so you guys can tell me.
I'm actually thinking the whole point for me, and somebody else can play it easy enough. I'm going to let someone else discover the journal, and I'm going to go get the testament off the shelf.
Okay.
Because that might be worth something. Her journal isn't worth anything.
Yeah.
Financially.
Yes.
Yeah, correct.
So I'll let someone else discover that so they feel like they got something out of it.
Okay.
And I'm going to steal the other book.
I definitely would like to take a peek at the journal.
Obviously. Yeah, I guess as soon as he lets us in, yeah. You know, looking around, if I see the journal, I'm gonna head for it and grab it. And
okay.
Let them know, look what I found, it's our journal, you know.
Mm-hmm. And going to, and I'll take a moment to back to the whole system we're playing, the drive, the thing that pushes your character forward, for mine is greed. So I'm deliberately deceiving my party, but not necessarily in a bad way.
Right.
I'm deceiving them for my gain,
right.
Not necessarily to mess them up or anything. And that's the whole point of the way I wanted to play that off.
Yeah, because there's a difference.
Yeah.
Then I want to screw you over.
Yeah.
Or
like that to me, when I said I took her journal and hid it, well, that doesn't help. Right. And it's not valuable. So I'll leave that out. Let someone else discover it without having to open the safe.
Because you're greedy, but we're all in this together.
Right. Yeah. And for people who haven't played this game, the concept of the drive is actually really important.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense for people to do a lot of the things that the investigators will ultimately do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as things get crazier and crazier and scarier and scarier, most people just go to the cops or run away. But that makes the game not fun at all.
Yeah.
So the idea is each of you have a drive that you have to follow. And in fact, if you don't follow your drive, there are mechanical, like you'll lose stability or sanity or things will, or health, you know, things will happen to you. And I can actually, in some ways, almost force you to follow your drives if I need to keep the plot moving. It won't be an issue with you guys, but there are some players who would be like, well, this is Cthulhu, I'm not done.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
That's what the idea there is. Why are you guys crazy enough to be wanting to follow these clues?
Mm-hmm.
All right, given our time, let's make this the last scene.
Sure.
So you have got the leather-bound book.
Yeah, Testiculum Vigiscrotum.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And Terrence has taken Margaret's journal, which you all recognize. She was always carrying it and writing in it. And when you open it, you see it's written in her easily recognizable flowing script. And most of it is just anecdotes of her travel.
I want to go to the last few pages.
Perfect. Okay, so the last few pages, she has been recording her time in Postbridge. I'm going to give this to you as a handout. It appears to have entries from January 9th, 11th, 12th, 13th. The last one is on the 13th, which either was the date of her death or the 14th might have been.
We arrived on the 14th.
We got the letter 15th. On the
14th. No, we got the letter.
Letter, sorry. Yeah.
And today's the 16th.
And I would imagine... And stereotype or not, but I would imagine a female British woman professor of that time and date is extremely legible for handwriting.
Yeah.
Say, why don't we, if it's okay, why don't we read this and then
go for it.
With the end of this journal entry? And if you don't want to read that all, we can pass it around or I can.
Go for it.
So January 9th, she says, my research has led me from Princeton to the quaint Devonshire village of Postbridge. The inhabitants are somewhat strange and unwelcoming, though my landlady, Hannah Buckman, is dear. My attempts to discuss the folklore of this locale, however, are currently thwarted by the unhelpful attitude of its residents. January 11th. I write with great excitement. I have recently made the acquaintance of my landlady's husband, a cheerful man named James. He has been the most helpful.
So he does
while out
exist.
Drinking at the village's local inn, I inquired about the local folklore of Dartmoor, and, after divulging some rudimentary tales, he stuck me with a revelation that I had not expected. He hinted that a sect resides within the village.
the roots of which might hark back to the times of druidic orders. Perhaps Anna Bray was correct that nearby Wistman's Wood could be a druid grove. I have penned a letter to my friends back in London to tell them of this news and bid them join me in what could be the discovery of a lifetime. Their expertise would be greatly helpful in unraveling this mystery. January 12th. My inquiries amongst Postbridge's citizens have all but been rebuffed. I am no closer to confirming or denying what James Buckman has revealed to me. Furthermore, he refuses to divulge anything further. In fact, he now beseeches me to drop my lines of inquiry. Last night, going so far as to raise his voice. I wonder if the visit from the local father had anything to do with his silence. Still, I am unperturbed. I will uncover the truth. Finally, on January 13th. Still, I am thwarted at every turn. The villagers are impossible to deal with and, at times, most rude. I am all but ready to drop my inquiries and move on to further to more fruitful pastures. I have seen a group of the locals heading out of the village. It is late, close to midnight. Perhaps this is my chance. My God, no one should have to witness such horrors. That poor soul, slaughtered in the prime of his life, and the howling of the beasts. It shall haunt me for the rest of my days. Then it appeared. Such a being does not bear description. It caused such a state of shock that I nearly lost my faculties, but I managed to turn and run for all I am worth. I heard a shout, but kept going. I must contact my friends and warn them not to come. I write this in case I do not make it out of this place. I fear the worst. They are coming for me.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wow.
That's pretty heavy.
So she didn't get around... she did not get around to writing to us to warn us, apparently.
Well, not in a letter, but certainly
is that
here.
Blood in the book? Keeper?
I do not you know think if that's, so.
It looks like there's a tea stain from a cup and then spots on the left.
I think that is from the... I don't know if that... I'll have to look if that was in the adventure, if that's
that's interesting. Yeah. It could be a Kurt stain.
Nice. No, it's definitely on the page.
She's got a Kurt stain in her book.
Wipe
that
off.
He was
they are coming for her, and I think that's probably a good place to stop until we pick up with the next set.
Yeah, they'll be coming.
Sounds good. Let me get the sound ready to finish here.
January 13th, 1935.
And we can all say
bye.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by One Joe Young. You can find us online at adventuresfromtheshed.com.